Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Shut up and put your money where your mouth is.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Welcome to the show. Today, we are not coming to you from Harrah's. Instead, we've got a special show with Dennis reporting live from the Bahamas. While we here in St. Louis are dealing with sub-freezing temperatures and snow that's been coming down since yesterday afternoon, Dennis has been basking in the sunshine and poker haven that is the Atlantis in the Bahamas. That's where the Poker Stars Caribbean Adventure is going on. And you know what? People have asked me over the years that I've known you, are you jealous of Dennis's success? And I tell them, you know what? As a friend, I'm really happy for everything that's happened to him and every place he's gotten to go. But I have to be honest with you. Today, I'm really jealous.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's in the high 70s down here. A little bit of a breeze, extremely sunny, extremely nice. Yeah, it's. Are you ready for this?
What?
I actually, yesterday morning, went out onto the resort and did, like, the water rafting and the slides and all the stuff like that.
You got wet?
I got wet.
You know, we're approaching the two-year anniversary of this show in a couple of weeks. And in all the places you've gone and all the things you've done, including a couple of times in the Bahamas and other luxury beach resorts, you haven't so much as put a toe in the sand. And now, this time, you went on slides and in pools?
Absolutely. I have no idea why. I don't know what the heck. This is my third time down here. First time, I never made it out of the casino and the hotel, basically. I just watched it from the window. Second time, I walked out there a couple of different times. That was it. For some reason, yesterday morning, I got talked into jumping onto the little tubes and riding down there. They have a mile current down here that goes around. I did a couple of the slides, both with tubes and just, you know, kamikaze type, including their, I don't even know what the heck they call it. It's a straight vertical drop of 40 feet.
That's like the speed slides that they have at Six Flags here at Hurricane Harbor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This one would equal it. There must be 20 slides down here. This resort is phenomenally large. It just doesn't make a difference where you go. It seems to just keep expanding. But you've got the ocean. You've got everything else. It's excellent that way. And if you can't find something to do down here and if you don't enjoy the sun, then I don't know what else you could ask for.
Well, I have to tell you, I had a virtually mirror experience to yours, because over the weekend I was in Biloxi, Mississippi at the Beau Rivage at their Southern Poker Championships. Did horribly, by the way, don't even ask. But because I was supposed to come home yesterday and the snowstorm that was rolling across the south and the southeast was coming through, I actually bailed out of there on Sunday afternoon. And even with that, having to fly through Memphis instead of Atlanta, which was already closed, it has been absolutely horrible here. So while you've been enjoying the fun and the sun and the suntan lotion and the slides and the pools, I've had literally the opposite experience here in the frigid south and midwest of the USA.
Okay. Well, I experienced a little bit of that over the holidays and that, going up into North Dakota and some different places.
That's right.
But I have to say, this is a rather nice change. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the poker. Let's talk about the poker aspect of it. The Poker Stars Caribbean Adventure, the PCA main event, started up over the weekend. You played in that. How'd you do?
Not well. I couldn't even survive day one. Ran into two bad hands and was eliminated by about the fourth level. They had another good go. Well, actually, I could describe one hand to you real briefly, and I'll let you tell me how you would have played it.
Okay.
How's that? All righty. I was on the big blind. I looked down at the queen 10 of diamonds. Aggressive guy at the table has been raising the majority of the hands, made a standard raise. This is when the blinds were, 200, 400 with an ante. So he raised it to about $950. He got two callers. I have a queen ten in the big blind with tremendous pot odds. So I just called to see a flop. Flop is a king of diamonds, a queen of hearts, and a seven of diamonds.
Okay.
So I have the second nut flush draw, and I have a pair.
Yep, you got middle pair and plus the back door straight. Okay.
Correct, correct. All righty. I checked. The gentleman that was the aggressor made a nice, solid bet out there. Let's see what he bet. Probably like 2,000. The other two people folded, and I thought about it a while. You know, what do I do here? Do I just smooth call him to tear another one off, or do I try and take it now? Because he's making a continuation. Quite likely he doesn't have anything. But he could have the king. I don't know. He has more chips than I do. I'm sitting there in the high 30s. We started with 30,000. I've added a few thousand to my chips, but not a whole lot. And then, but he has probably close to 55. So, in that position, Paul, what would just to quiz you for a quick second, what would you do?
Because I'm out of position, and I'm afraid that he is going to come back over me. If I were to raise him there, I'm probably not going to raise. I'm probably just going to call. We're playing fairly deep. I'm going to call, try to take a card off, see what develops. If it, if I hit my flush, bingo. If I make two pair, bingo. And if I catch another card that's going to lead me to that backdoor straight, I'm probably going to continue with the hand as well. But I'm probably not raising there. I'm probably just calling. What did you do?
Okay. I called.
Okay.
All right. Not a problem at all. With the call, with that 4,000 plus put in there and everything pre-flop, there's a little over 8,000 in the pot now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I've got a little over 3,000 in it. So, you know, I haven't invested maybe 8 to 9% of
mm-hmm.
Turn card is a six of diamonds.
Beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. And you're against a very aggressive person, a hobby like that? I checked.
Mm-hmm.
He bet 7,800.
Hmm.
Which is, you know, better than 20, about a quarter of the chips I have left.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you do, Paul? Well, I already did it, so my answer is already down.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think I might have let out there instead of checking.
Okay.
Because I would want to get more money in the pot, and I would want to see where I was. You know, there's always the chance that this guy was also on the nut flush draw himself, had raised with something like ace-nine of diamonds or ace-jack of diamonds. I mean, those are certainly hands that people in tournaments are going to be raising with, more likely the ace-jack. And if that's what he's got, fine. Now, on the flop, there was the king was not the king of diamonds, right?
Was the king of diamonds.
Okay, well, so he's not in there with ace, king of diamonds. Not in there with ace, queen of diamonds, because you've got that. So I'm going to say if he's got something here, he's got to have ace, jack of diamonds. That's the one and only hand I can put him on here. I don't see him raising preflop with something like ace, six of diamonds or something like that. I'm not sure that I can get away from my hand at this point. I'm not sure that calling is going to do much of anything. I might min-raise the guy, not put all of my chips at risk, but I realize that would be putting 50% of my chips at risk. I might min-raise the guy and see what happens.
Wow, this is scary. I made a 16-2. This is really scary. Honest, guys, we have not tossed this over
before. No, no.
That's exactly what I did.
It's like a magician. I have not prearranged anything with my stooge.
Wow. No, I made it 16-2.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, this is the aggressor at the table. The reason why I did check and do the check raise was I was 100% sure with whatever hand he had, because he raised so big on the flop, he probably had hit at least some portion of it, he would try and push me out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was his standard operating procedure.
Yep.
So I was just almost 100% sure he would throw the bet out there. And like you said, at this stage, it's going to be awful difficult for me to get away from the second nut hand. So I want him to put more chips out there. I want to come over the top, you know, and see what happens. I did the 16-2, and he went into the tank. Thought about it for a while, and thought about it, and then smooth called me.
Okay, oh. Let me just stop for just a second here, because I want to talk about this whole going into the tank thing. Because I've seen this more and more, particularly in the last year in tournaments. Normally, in that situation, if the guy has you beat, he doesn't tank. He usually acts fairly quickly. I mean, you go back 5 years ago in this situation, and if the guy has the nut flush there, when you min-raise him, he's instantly going to come back over the top and maybe even move all in on you. If he thinks about it, he's thinking about it for 5 to 10 seconds tops. But I find now, more recently, that people are trying to make you think like they don't have it. They're trying to give off the reverse tell that they really are worried about this and they really have to make a big decision here. And so they fake tank for a minute, 90 seconds, even 2 minutes, or sometimes longer, and then make the move while all of this time has been going by and you've been building up your confidence. And then you find out, oh, he tanked with the nuts. Have you, before you tell me what happened here, have you found yourself in that situation?
Oh, I've actually used it. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Whatever the standard, you know, a lot of times people say, you know, an instant act a lot of times can be a bluff, especially if it doesn't make sense in what's happening before that during that particular hand. There's lots of things that are standard, I guess you'd call them tells, for lack of a better word. And somebody right there going into the tank and thinking about it is not what you would perceive as the norm if he would have the nuts.
Yep.
Correct.
Right.
So that's good analysis. And like I said, I've done that myself. So when he smooth called me, the most likely hands that I would put him on were two different hands. He either has a very, very good hand with a set of some sort and thinks he has out, or he has something like an ace-king with the ace of diamonds. And another king. So he has top pair, top kicker, and nut flush draw.
Yep.
So, you know, monstrous ones, right? You know, it's always possible he would have two diamonds with the ace, but I would put that as the third most likely scenario on this group.
Yep.
So what I'm worried about right now is the stupid board pairing on the river.
You don't want a diamond. So, you don't want the board to pair.
You don't want it to pair. You don't want another diamond. You don't want whatever reason why he's calling you to show up there to give you your heart attack.
Come on, deuce of clubs.
Yeah. Well, it total blank comes out there. I can't even remember what the devil it was. It was a small card, a non-diamond small card, maybe four of hearts, I feel. All right? So I have ballpark 16,000 left. The pot out there is three times that size.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Again, I have to be first to act. Do you check? Do you put it out there? What do you do?
I shove.
Yeah, I shoved. If he shoves, I'm calling. I'm not going to lay it down at this stage.
Right.
You know. So yeah, I put my chips out there and be done. He couldn't wait to call me.
Oh.
Ace nine of diamonds.
Oh. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, ace nine of diamonds with the raised preflop, you know, a little bit loose there. But, you know, when we narrowed it down there, we figured, okay, preflop,
oh, yeah,
has got to have ace jack of diamonds or ace nine of diamonds to make this move. And, oh, man.
Yeah. So I stand up, shake people's hands, and walk away.
Wow.
Only one hand that can beat me. Guess what he's got?
Yeah. Wow. All right, so that knocked you out of the main event. What have you played since then?
Yesterday I played in the 2K, the $2,000 event. We started out with about 500 people. There's about 110 left, and I am still in it.
Oh, congratulations.
So we're 40 people from the money right now. I've got just a little below average chips back. It was a horrible day. I actually think I played some of the best poker I've played in quite a while. Because I literally, every time, we started with 12,000 in chips, and every time I would creep up to 20, 25,000, you know, taking down some small pots, you know, playing my position well or something, I would run into a hand and I would double up whoever happened to be the short stack at the table. I did that three times.
Mm-hmm.
Pocket jacks against an ace queen, pocket tens against an ace king, pocket nines against an ace ten. And I lost all three of them.
Wow.
And those are up to that stage, those were the three best hands I'd had all day. And I lost all three of them.
Oh.
So So with 1.5 levels left last night, I am sitting on 6,300. Started with 12.
Mm-hmm.
Average at this time is over 40,000. I have 6,300.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyhow, took me about three different hands. One of them I actually had a good hand. Another one I hit a monster flop and slow played a guy that I ended up actually tripling up on it. But I got up over 40,000. I finished the day with right at 40,000.
Nice.
Well, I'm in good shape. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
That is the ultimate of patience.
Yeah.
Hand after hand after hand after hand of deuce 10, 3, 9, 4, 7. I could just recite this. It was so frustrating. But patience, patience. Stay in the tournament. As long as you have a seat, you have a chance.
That's the Dennis Phillips discipline right there. All right, let's talk about a little bit other PCA news. We found out who Isildur is, and to no one's surprise, it turned out to be this European player named Victor Blom. Have you had a chance to talk to this kid?
I have not. He's been swamped around here and everything. I will be talking to him before the end of the week, find out exactly what all's going on. He's a very young guy. He seems to be a little bit shy, actually. You know, not used to the media attention or anything, but pretty good guy. So I'll see if I can line up and see if I can give you a little report next week about him.
Okay, great. All right, the 100K Super High Roller took place last week, and Eugene Kachalov was heads up with Daniel Negreanu, with Kachalov coming out on top, taking down the $1.5 million first prize. He actually told some media outlet that the reason he played in the $100,000 buy-in event was because he wanted to stay at the Cove Resort, which is apparently the really exclusive part of the Atlantis. And it was booked up, and they had only saved suites for people who were buying into this huge event like whales. And so that's why he did it, so he could get that. And, of course, now he can easily pay the hotel bill because he won $1.5 million.
Well, yeah, actually, if you look what's going on in the main event, the top four players are all going to be at a million plus. The top two players in that 100K were over a million. Not for sure if any of these others, the next high roller or anything, are going to hit quite that level. But we're talking about some massive, massive prize pools down here.
And congratulations to Daniel Negreanu, who was in second place there, got himself $1 million. That moved him ahead of Phil Ivey on the all-time lifetime earnings list. Others at that final table, by the way, in case you thought that the rest of it was kind of soft, Nick Schulman, Bryn Kenny, Umberto Benes, Lucky Chewy, Andrew Lichtenberger, and a guy by the name of Dem John, who I know nothing about other than he is the richest man in Hungary.
Okay, that's quite the title to have.
I'll tell you this, as a poker player, whether you're a recreational player like me or a pro like you and the rest of these guys, when you hear that anybody is sitting down and they are the richest man in any country, that's going to be good for you.
It sure can't be bad. But let me tell you, I think we started out with 38 players. He made it to 8th or 7th, so that's just not too bad.
That's true. One other note from the 100K Super High Roller, Scott Seaver, when he sat down, tried to get the players at the table to put on the deuce 7 prop for $1,000 a person. In a 100K buy-in tournament. It took about 5 seconds for the table to say, I don't think so.
Wow. That's awesome. I did not know that.
Now, that 100K high roller event is eventually going to air on ESPN2, and this Saturday, the main event final table is going to be airing live on ESPN3. I think it starts at 4 o'clock Central Time on Saturday afternoon on the Internet, on ESPN3.com. And then at 9 o'clock Central Time that night, ESPN2 is going to pick up the coverage, which will have Chad Brown doing some analysis in the booth, along with the English guy whose name I can't remember, who does such a good job on these streaming things. But is it
Michael Tucker, I think.
I'm sorry?
Michael Tucker, is that correct?
I can't remember his name. Might be.
Please.
But ESPN2, the broadcast channel, is going to pick it up and run with it until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning with live coverage, just as they do with the streaming coverage online. So that'll be a first. I don't know that there's ever been a major poker event like this that has been not just streamed, but also put out there on ESPN. Be interesting to see what kind of viewership they get. And one of the other big pieces of news out of the PCA, which you tipped me to yesterday, was the introduction of a brand new PokerStars game, or a way for people to play on PokerStars, called the Home Game. Now, let's go into detail on this. Fill us in.
Well, it's quite simple concept. It's quite difficult to implement. But you always hear complaints or problems or questions from people about the security of it and who you're playing against and how you can set it up and the problems in the chat box and this and that and everything else. How would you like it if we could set it up so that just as though you were playing in your own living room and you were playing nine people that you know, nine people that you trust, nine people who you want to play. Maybe one of them is the richest guy from Hungary. I don't know. And you set this up, and all of the setup and the rake and the dealing and the everything else is handled. And maybe you have two friends that had to go to San Francisco for the weekend or something, and they can be sitting in their hotel room and still join you for it. They've got it set up now so that you are in total control. You can go on to the site. You can set it up. You can set it up for tournaments. You can set it up for cash games. You can do whatever you want. You pick the stakes. You pick everything. And you pick who gets to play so that you can only have the people in there that you know, only the people that you want to play with. It opens up the chat box then, so it's a group of friends basically talking back and forth or typing it in there. Anywhere in the world, these people can get together and can have a night of fun playing poker.
So this could be you have a home game in some city that doesn't have a Harrah's poker room nearby, and so you play in a home game, and one of the guys gets transferred by his job to Pittsburgh. You live in Santa Fe, and he still wants to play, and he misses playing in the home game. Now you can move the home game online, and he can still be a part of it, and so can anybody else who may have moved away who used to be a part of it years ago. Now they can rejoin and be back in the club.
That's it, exactly. It's almost without restrictions within yourself. You are the one that actually sets up the borders and the restrictions and everything. You are in total control of it. A person only gets into that home game if you allow them to do it. Each and every player that's on PokerStars.net is going to be allowed to set up three different poker leagues. And you can participate in up to 10 different poker leagues. And what that means is if you have 10 different friends, or 20 different friends, or 40 different friends, however you want to do it, you can set it up there to do whatever and however you want to do it online.
So it doesn't have to be just one table. It could be a tournament of your own with 3, 4, 10 tables if you wanted it to be.
Absolutely could be. Now, there's just so much freedom here. It's amazing. And I'm going to take it to another level. And I really would love some feedback from people. I would love to do this. I would love to see this as an online charity event benefiting somebody. I would love to see it as a competition between a couple of schools and the alumni. I would love to see this. So many different things you can do here, you know, for social awareness, for really using this fun game to your benefit.
So you could talking about the alumni, let me just give an example here. You could have a Mizzou Alumni League and an Illinois Alumni League. And when it gets down to those leagues working their way down to their own individual winners, then you could have the Mizzou champion going heads up against the Illinois champion.
You absolutely could. And you could set it up such that you could have a rake off the whole thing going into a prize pool that's going to go to the sports program of whichever school you want.
Mm.
You could do, I just let your mind go wild. The options here are just phenomenal. Could you see an MS poker league where every single hand is played there, a portion is donated then to MS, and it just keeps accumulating? Could you see a league where everybody's playing for a prize down here to the PCA, and we work that out with PokerStars and taken care of, and it's all handled, and it couldn't be simpler. Now, a portion of every week's during the, say, 10-week session that you'd have the league, a portion of all of the winnings and everything goes back into a prize pool, and that pool then awards the winner of the whole thing, however you set it up, be it in points, be it in places, be it in dollars, be it in whatever, then wins a prize to the PCA.
Wow. Now, let's say you set this up as a cash game. Can you set it up to be any stakes you want? And I guess more importantly, could you make it any game that you want? So if you don't want to just play No Limit Hold'em, you could do one round of No Limit Hold'em and one round of Pot Limit Omaha, or make it a mixed games format and have limit games mixed in with other games. And would it be possible to be that flexible with what you set up?
Yes. Now, what the original limitations on this thing, the maximum that you're going to have, I believe, on a cash game would be like a 10-20 would be the highest stakes they would have you have online. However, all you have to do is petition support at PokerStars, and they would then raise the limits based upon your playing history. So if you're on there normally playing a little bit bigger than that, they have no problem raising it up. They just don't want people to go in there and immediately dive in and get themselves in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a social conscious catch there,
yeah,
which I really think is very, very appropriate.
Yep.
And so everybody will start out at that level at a maximum. But, you know, moving up from there is very, very easy to do as you prove that, you know, you can handle it. And, yeah, you can play whatever stakes you want.
So
as far as games go, you can have up to 5 different games set up upon in your league, and you have total discretion of those, and it can be anything that's played on PokerStars.
And again, going back to the stakes, it doesn't have to be anything big. People could play 1 cent, 2 cent if they wanted to.
Absolutely. Have fun. Enjoy it. Think of it this way. This is the perfect way to learn the game in the security of playing with your own friends. To get comfortable on it before you expand out, before you go to Harris to play in the tournaments there. Learn the game, learn it among your friends, learn it at a low stake, or even play money. Just don't worry about it. Go to PokerStars.net, set it up, and start playing there.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with more of The Final Table with Dennis Phillips at the PCA, the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure at Atlantis in the Bahamas. I'm Paul Harris here in snowy, cold St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com with our podcasts available for subscription via iTunes, absolutely free, or you can listen to them via the embedded player on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. This is The Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis. I am Paul Harris, along with Team PokerStars pro Dennis Phillips, who is at the PCA, the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure in the Bahamas. A reminder that next week on the show, we will have Prahlad Friedman, who we speculated about 2 weeks ago about possibly being a new member of Team UB. He has signed a deal with Ultimate Bet, and he will talk about that. Here's a guy who, for the last couple of years, had said he would never sign with anybody. He thought it would be selling out to do so. Well, he has sold out. You know he has, because he's doing our show. So Prahlad will be on with us next week. And then the week after, we'll have the woman who I think you'd have to consider the hottest female tournament poker pro in the world right now, Vanessa Selbst. My apologies to Vanessa Russo for giving Vanessa Selbst that title, but I think she earned it in 2010, and she'll be on with us in 2 weeks. A reminder that this weekend at Harrah's St. Louis, you can be part of the World Series of Poker main event qualifier. They'll be doing these double shootout rounds on Saturday at noon and 3, and on Sunday at noon and 3. This is how Dennis got into the main event in 2008, with a $200 investment that ended up earning him $4.5 million and a place in poker history as one of the first November Niners. If you want to do the same and follow in his footsteps, this weekend at Harrah's St. Louis, Saturday and Sunday, you beat the table. It's like a single table sit and go. You beat the table to go to the final table. You beat the final table, and you're in the main event for this summer. For more details, go to harrahs.com/STL poker. And one other Harrah's promotion I got to mention. All through the month of January, you buy a buffet and you play the slots for free Monday through Thursday. If you go in at breakfast, buy a breakfast buffet, you get $5 free slot play. You buy a lunch buffet, you get $7 free slot play. You buy a dinner buffet, you get $10 free slot play. This is for everyone 21 or older with a total rewards card. You get the free slot play on the date of purchase at the Eat Up Buffet at Harrah's St. Louis. Details on that also on the Harrah's website. All right, so Dennis is at the PCA. He's about to run back into the 2K buy-in event where he has made day number two. In addition to all the tournaments that are going on, and I think he told me it's something like four dozen tournaments running over the 2 weeks of the PCA, there must be some great cash game action as well.
There's some phenomenal cash game action going on here at almost any level, almost any kind. When you walk into the room there, it's similar to what was at the Rio, just a massive, massive amount of tables. And you might have a PLO going on over here and a cash one going on over here, and who knows what the heck y'all got going on. There's always two or three tournaments going on. I think the most is in one day there's five different tournaments that are going on. So if you come down to this PCA, you've got 2 weeks of nothing but solid poker, and the cash games are very good. Let me just give you a hint. They had like 16 or 1700 in the main event. Over 1,000 of them qualified online. Many of these people have never played live before. They come down here with a nice bankroll, playing in the main event, and get knocked out and say, what am I going to do for the next 4 or 5 or 6 days? And guess where they end up?
Yep.
I can name you at least two pros I know that come down here and never play a tournament. Yeah. That sit at the cash games and smile at them and say, hey, how you doing? Yeah, we got a seat right here.
Well, you know, Dennis, from the last several years that is what I like to do during the first weekend, during the first week of the World Series of Poker out in Las Vegas, because, again, you got all these guys who maybe they've gone out with friends and gotten a house in Vegas for the summer. They're going to stay out there for the whole series, and they've got a backpack full of cash, and they can't wait to get it into the cash games. And, yeah, they may do well online, but live cash play is something very different than online tournament play. And in addition, you've got lots of people who have won their way in to any number of events out there through satellites in their local casinos or at the Rio themselves, and they do it exactly the same way. So I'm not surprised to hear that there are pros who go to the PCA, which is the second largest poker tournament in the world after the WSOP, and have that exact strategy.
Yeah, I mean, and are quite successful at it. The action here, they were spreading at 25-50 game was the biggest, but there were some really deep stacks at that table. And a lot of 2-5s and 5-10s scattered all around there, and a lot of PLO action. I was kind of... action is down here. You would love it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that there's plenty of PLO down there, because it's, there was lots of it in Biloxi when I was there this weekend, but in a lot of other places, unfortunately, it's very difficult to find. Okay, we've got to talk about a couple of things in the news, one of which is another robbery at the Bellagio. I can't even count the number of times in the last year you and I have talked on this show about security problems at the Bellagio. They even go back to Greg Raymer getting mugged in the hallway in December of 2004 as he was going back to his room. He was carrying $150,000 in cash, and two guys stopped him, and he managed to fight his way out of it and get safely into his hotel room with the cash. Then we had the story from just a few months ago of Scotty Montgomery, a fellow November Niner with you from 2008, who was accosted in a Bellagio bathroom by a guy with a gun who got away with $2,000 of Scotty's money. And there have been a couple of other of these similar stories. Well, here's one from just last Tuesday. A guy by the name of R.J. Bell writes on his blog that he was playing in the 5-10 no-limit game at Bellagio, which is usually a pretty good game. He got up to go to the bathroom. He left his cash and his chips on the table, which a lot of people do. When he got back, it was all gone. He asked, what happened to my stack? And the player next to him said, oh, somebody walked by and grabbed it all and kept walking. And Dennis, no one stopped him.
I'm flabbergasted. That's all there is to it. What happened to security council? Cameras? What happened to the managers in the room? What happened to all the four people that are walking around there? What about the dealer?
Well, Bell says
think something was wrong?
Bell says he complained. The dealer just shrugged. The floor supervisor was no help. The shift manager didn't do much more. It took 30 or 40 minutes before security showed up, and all they did was give him some forms to fill out, but no promise that he would get his money back.
Wow. That's not acceptable.
No.
That's all there is to it. That's not just not, if that's the way it happened, and granted, we're only getting one side of the story here.
Yep.
But if that's the way it happened, that's just totally unacceptable.
Well, I actually think there are two lessons that can be learned here. One is that I have seen people being careless with their money in casinos. You know, pulling out large sums of money in places where they shouldn't do that. I mean, you'd never do it at the 7-Eleven. You'd never do it at the ballpark. You certainly shouldn't feel like you can do it in a casino. There are people who are going to be looking around, and if you pull out a huge wad of hundreds, or 20s for that matter, you may just be asking for trouble. The other thing is, if you play in a cash game that allows cash on the table, now here in St. Louis, it's only chips allowed on the table.
Right.
But if you play in Vegas or in Biloxi this weekend or Tunica or other places, you don't have to put your whole buy-in on the table in chips. You can play cash, $100 bills, play there. If you do that and you're in a game and you have to get up to go to the bathroom or you have to get up to take a phone call on your cell or you are going to take a dinner break or whatever it is, pick up your cash and take it with you. And what you do is you announce to the dealer, you know, I'm picking up $600. I'm picking up $6,000, whatever it is. You show them that you're picking it up and then you bring it back to the table when you return. And by the way, by saying it to the dealer, you're also kind of announcing it to the rest of the table so that when you come back, you can put that money back in play, even if it's over the cap. That 5-10 game at Bellagio has a $1,500 buy-in cap. You may have $3,000 because you've been having a good day. You want to be able to make sure you can put that money back on the table when you return. I had a friend who was playing in a 10-20 game about 3 years ago at Bellagio. He went to the bathroom, came back, and $4,000 in cash was gone. Apparently, the same kind of thing. A guy walks over to the table, leans over, maybe he says hello to somebody or just to check out the action, grabs the bills, and is gone. He also never got any of it back. So pick up your bills when you leave the table, bring them back when you come back, and also, if you got large denomination chips that you normally would keep on top, put them underneath your white $1 chips or underneath your red $5 chips just to protect your stack while you're not there.
Those are words of wisdom. There's no doubt about it. As I shared one other time, a friend of mine was out in Vegas and had his bag stolen while he was in the bathroom. He actually set the bag down, was using the facility, came back, and the bag is gone type deal. And they identified. He was so insistent that he made the security go through the camera and such and took the time to do it because he had a sizable amount of money in the bag. They actually saw the guy coming out of the bathroom with the bag and followed him all the way to the door and out and had him fill out papers and this and that, and he never heard word one back from him.
Yep.
So, you know, even being insistent, even trying to get security involved, even looking at the cameras, and they still didn't follow up and do anything.
Right. I think that's a problem. And people may feel like we're picking on the Bellagio. And it is because they are one of the highest profile poker rooms in the world that we hear about stories like this. I don't know whether crime is rampant there or the Bellagio security is not doing a good job on a regular basis or if it's just because they are so high profile that we hear stories about this. But this is going to come back to hurt their brand, and perhaps us talking about it on the show so often will make somebody at the MGM Mirage Corporation, owners of the Bellagio, or maybe somebody in that poker room will wise up and realize if word of mouth spreads that you don't have a safe place for your players to play and to have their money and chips on the table, then that's going to hurt you in the long run. You're already getting hurt by the great job that Kathy Raymond and the people at the Venetian are doing with their poker room, which is challenging you for supremacy as best poker room in Las Vegas. And you know, if the Bellagio doesn't wise up here, I think that they are really in for some trouble from player feedback, because this guy who wrote this blog, he says he won't go back there. He won't put another chip on the table at Bellagio. As good as he may think the games are, he just won't go back there because of the way he was treated after he was a crime victim.
Wow. Yeah, I don't even know how to answer that, but I don't blame him. You would expect at least some level of security and safety in there with your chips sitting on a table under the cameras with the floor people and with a dealer sitting there, you know, no more than 3 or 4 feet from the chips.
Right.
For somebody to walk up there and not only take any kind of cash, but to take the chips too, I mean, yeah, that just flabbergasted me.
Absolutely. And by the way, what about the other players at the table not recognizing that that's not the guy that goes with those chips and nobody says anything?
Yeah, yeah, that's... it almost sounds unbelievable. That's why I said we've only heard his opinion of it. Maybe there's a second side to it. I don't know what the heck it could be. But this just sounds so far-fetched that it's almost ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised, and I believe the story. But like I said, we put it out there as a warning, particularly about not leaving your cash and big denomination chips out there for somebody to take, particularly if you're sitting at one of those tables they have at Bellagio that's near the rail where tourists can stop by and watch the games and... Well, you know what? Just be careful. It's simple, common sense. And unfortunately, in that environment, some people can tend to forget that sort of thing. All right. Enough about that. The other big story I got to bring up, you and I have talked, Dennis, often on this show about online poker and getting it regulated and licensed. And we went through the whole thing during the lame duck session with Harry Reid's bill that did not pass. And the PPA is going to continue fighting for that. And if you're not a member, go to theppa.org. and become a member. But there's a story breaking just yesterday out of New Jersey that the legislature there, both houses of the New Jersey legislature, have passed an intrastate online gambling bill that will now go to Governor Christie there, who they say is likely to pass it. It is not just online poker, but all the games offered in Atlantic City casinos, roulette, baccarat, blackjack, craps, the big wheel, slot machines, other things that the Atlantic City licensed operators are offering now, they would be allowed to offer online only to residents of New Jersey or anybody who is playing in New Jersey. So if you stayed in a hotel, for instance, in Newark, you could play online against other New Jerseyans or against the house. I guess poker would be the only thing you play against other New Jerseyans. But how will this work if we still have the current federal laws in place, including the UIGEA? Do you know anything about this?
I don't know for sure exactly how it will fit in there. I haven't seen the final version of the bill. The original one that I am familiar with also permitted them. It was like New Jersey was an island as far as the USA was concerned, but the people outside of the U.S. could also play online. So basically the only people that couldn't play with them were the other 49 states. If that's still the case, and if it is as wide open as you say it is, which it probably is, I would suspect that the federal government is going to step into this and is going to challenge the legality of it and challenge whether or not this can be implemented. Even if the governor signs that bill, it's still going to take them several months to get everything in place and get the regs written and everything like that before it can actually be implemented, during which time I'm quite sure there's going to be some hot conversation between New Jersey and Washington, D.C. I would expect the federal government to step in there. And remember, the federal government can dictate to some degree what the states do. They have huge federal funding that can be withheld if the state doesn't want to comply with it. There can be all sorts of court cases. I mean, this could end up dragging into courts for years trying to decide the legality of it and whether they can or cannot implement this kind of a law. It's being put forward, just the form they're doing it is one that I have a problem with, to be honest.
Why do you have a problem with it?
Federal government. Well, because they are opening it up to everything. It is skilled, it is unskilled, it is basically a wide open door. And it's a revenue grab. They're trying to get funds for New Jersey, and they're trying to do it any way they can. And they're trying to do it to fund, they even have openly said it, to fund the horse racing industry through this. I worry that there won't be the social amendments that need to be put in there, the safeguards that need to be put in there to it. I worry about how they're going to try and regulate somebody in Afghanistan, in Poland, in Australia, in whatever, playing against the guys in New Jersey. I don't know that they have the expertise or anything of doing this the way these online companies have done it. I will tell you for a fact that PokerStars, almost 20% of their employees do nothing but security. It is a huge problem because of these internet guys and how intelligent they are and how they're always trying to find new ways to circumvent and get a little bit of an advantage. They stay on top of it only because they dedicate so much time to it, only because they have such experience, only because they're willing to work hard at it, and they have that experience. I don't know. I really have a problem with this state going out there and just saying, well, we're going to ignore everything else. We're going to open it up so you can play Baccarat and slots and whatever the devil you want to, and all it is we're going to take a rake of everything you do. So we're going to fill up our coffers at the possible detriment of everything else, including the other poker players.
Yeah,
because if they implement this, the poker players in New Jersey can't play against a poker player in New York. I mean, there's just all sorts of things on this that I don't like.
Yeah, well, you've said in the past before some very, very valid reasons for not wanting to have state-by-state, intrastate online poker. So you only get to compete. I mean, that takes away a lot of the fun of being able to play online, which is that you could play anywhere you wanted to. Even as we were talking before about the PokerStars home game, which you would be able to play with, friends of yours who moved to other places and you wanted to play against them. Well, I guess in New Jersey, they couldn't be included in that because they'd have to play under whatever they're setting up there. So not only would that be bad for poker players, but I am worried, and it sounds to me like you're a little bit worried about them getting it wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm worried about it. It just seems like it's a rush to order. They're stamping forward because of the action that was happening in Washington and then got stalled. They want to be the first person out the door. They want to have something in place so that they can do the revenue grabbing. Instead of sitting back and figuring out what is best for the poker players, what's best for everybody, it's basically, let's get a law in place and go out there and see how much money we can bring in. I hope the heck I'm wrong, but I'm afraid I'm not.
Do you hear rumblings about this sort of thing in other states?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's actions going on in California, in Florida, in Nevada, all sorts of different things. I've been privy to some information on that. Hopefully, what could be implemented in the other states would not be this far-reaching, would not be so wide-open money-grabbing, I guess you'd say. I just really don't like the bill, the way it was written, how wide open it is, the lack of the social amendments that should be in there, everything. So I have not seen the final version. Maybe they've made some changes in the last week, but if it's what the version that I was read, I definitely think there's some major, major problems with it.
Well, we'll certainly follow the story because we've been talking about this for the nearly 2 years that we've been doing this show, and we want to make sure that when online poker is licensed and regulated by governments at any level in this country, that it is done correctly so that it works out for both poker players and whatever revenue is generated for whatever government is regulating it. But also, we want the consumer protections to be in there, which Dennis mentioned, which are so important. And we will certainly keep you posted on this. A couple of other stories in the news. They had the World Series of Poker circuit event that started late last week at a Choctaw resort in Oklahoma, which is just over the Texas border. Those Oklahoma casinos draw huge numbers of people from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and because of that, they had 935 people in the first event, a $340 buy-in no-limit hold'em tournament. 935 is not a record for a World Series of Poker event, a circuit event, that is. The Horseshoe Hammond, just outside of Chicago, had more than 1,600 in its first event last October when we talked about. But still, that's a lot of people showing up, particularly with bad weather.
Oh, absolutely, I agree. And it just goes what I've said time and time again. Poker is here to stay. Poker is growing. It is an enjoyable sport. It's fun to play. And there is also always that carrot at the end, I guess you'd say. Going down there and playing against 900 and such people and actually winning that tournament, I mean, That's huge.
That's huge. And so, bodes well for the circuit event we're going to have here at Harrah's St. Louis starting March 31st and running for 2 weeks up to the main event, which is a $1,600 main event here in St. Louis. If you want details on that, you can go to harrahs.com/STL poker. Dennis and I both planning on being there for a lot of that. TV poker news. Last week, the Poker After Dark show returned with a $100,000 buy-in sit-and-go. You know, we talked about the super high roller event down there at the PCA, which was a 100K buy-in. This was a 100K buy-in single table sit-and-go with six players, including Durr and Phil Galfond and John Juwanda and Eric Lindgren and Phil Ivey and the eventual winner, Huck Seed.
There's a soft lineup.
Soft lineup, and Huck takes it all down. You know, in a tournament, if you cash, you may not win the big prize, but at least you'll get something back. Here, you either win it or you get nothing. Huck takes down the 600K first prize. When it got down to heads up, it was him and Ivy, and it took exactly three hands. The first two, they played kind of small pots. On the second one, it all went in when Ivy had a pair of sixes and Huck had a pair of eights, and the flop had two eights. Hand over!
Yeah, that would take care of it.
You know, it's not enough to win $600,000, but to take it down with quads, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, you don't have to worry too much about the river card.
No, you don't. I've already told you that World Poker Tour is going to be resuming next month on FSN. We're going to have Tony Dunst on the show, the guy who's going to be the new analyst. That doesn't mean that Mike and Vince are out. They'll still be doing the play-by-play, and Kimberly Lansing will be the hostess, and they'll also have the Royal Flush Girls. But I think you may like what we're going to see from Tony Dunst, who's known as Bond 18 Online. I think he's going to be a star. We'll talk with him on the show the week before the WPT new season kicks off on Fox Sportsnet. And, you know, I was thinking about these 100K buy-ins, the super high roller down there and this thing on Poker After Dark last week. I can remember not all that long ago, Dennis, when $10,000 was an unimaginable sum for somebody to use to buy into it. And then there were the 25Ks, like the WPT Championship and the Poker Stars, North American Poker Tour high roller events. This is 100K now we're talking about this year. That's got to be the cap. We can't go bigger than that, can we?
Want to bet? I told you, poker is exploding in every aspect. You're seeing more and more 10K events now. They're actually getting fairly commonplace around here, and 5Ks definitely are. The 25K that people were thinking about beforehand, or the 25,000 pounds where it was in the EPT in London a couple of years ago, so it was 40,000 actually. And Monte Carlo, I think what was it, 33,000 in Monte Carlo in U.S. dollars. It's just going to continue to grow. I honestly think you're going to see the main event eventually go up from 10,000 to 20,000. I think you're going to see not a 50K horse, but a 100K horse. And at some time, don't know when, at some time, you're going to see something where, you know, it's almost maybe a quarter of a million to sit down at the table.
Well,
and they'll put 10 guys around the table.
You know, that might make for good TV and be good for these super high roller pros. I just hope that it doesn't increase the bottom end. There still need to be the $40 buy-ins, the $60 buy-ins like they have at Harrah's St. Louis, or the $300 and $500 buy-ins at the circuit events and other places. Those need to be there because most people will never, ever, ever dream of buying into a tournament as big as those we were just discussing.
Right. I agree with you 100%. There has to be a whole wide range. Again, the spectrum now seems to be just increasing and increasing, just like they did when we talked about chips, and everybody now seems to be a deep stack. Well, I don't think they may get away from it a little bit, but if they do, they'll come right back to it. The $500 events around here for the biggies and stuff like that, they're just a mainstay. They're just the ones that are going to be there. There's no doubt about it.
All right. Well,
and they're fun to play.
I know you've got to run back to your $2,000 buy-in event, which you've gotten to day two on, and we wish you luck with that. And we'll look forward to a full report on next week's Final Table show. And also joining us next week, Prahlad Friedman, newly signed with UB.com. perhaps taking the place of Phil Hellmuth, perhaps taking the place of Annie Duke. Both of them are out. Prahlad is in. We'll hear that story next week. You can get our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com, or join us next Tuesday from Harrah's St. Louis on The Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.